You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, September 4th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, professor of law at Columbia University, author of The Master Switch, and candidate for lieutenant governor in New York State, Tim Wu. Also on the program today, how big goes on bonk? What does that mean? It means the how big the Burwell case. The case that looked like it may defund Obamacare doesn't look like it's going to defund Obamacare. Big story. Also across the country, more fast food strikes. At least 30 people arrested. And it's barely noon. And in Kansas, what's the matter with Kansas? Well, a little bit less. Today, the Democrat drops out of the Kansas Senate race, leaving the field between an independent and Kansas Republican Senator Pat Roberts. And Roberts is in trouble. Also on the program today, new report, the food gap is widening between low-income and upper-income people. All that and more on the program today, ladies and gentlemen. I know some of you have asked me why New York State so New York State centric with Wu and Zephyr Teachout, and I posed that question to Wu. And there's a couple of things that really do have national implications in this election. And Wu is running for lieutenant governor. And oddly, we just pre-taped this interview this morning. Kathy Hochul's name never even came up, really, in the course of my interview with Wu. He's an interesting guy, has some interesting ideas beyond this race. And we talked about those as well. He is the man who coined the term net neutrality. And but Kathy Hochul is just horrible. And on some level, that was there. It never came up because I feel like that was just understood on some level. Like, it never even occurred to me. Oh, yeah, there's people actually who would vote for Kathy Hochul. And I will also say this. We mentioned this in the interview. There is no public polling of this race. But I have heard chitter chatter that the Cuomo campaign has done internal polling, and it's got them nervous. Much more so for Wu than in terms of Zephyr Teachout, although they're also very concerned that Zephyr Teachout is going to get a number that could seriously embarrass Andrew Cuomo. So just a reminder, go out and vote on Tuesday. Tell your friends to vote on Tuesday. This just in, and yes, we will, of course, talk about the mayor. I said I'd never go back to Bloomberg ever, except for today.
Could not be more done with that job.
All right, we'll save that for the better half. We don't. I don't know if there's anything more narrow than our poor.
We should really be more thoughtful about how parochial we are in our interests and coverage. Anyways, Mayor Mike Bloomberg returning to his financial services gig.
So, folks, as you know, this show is completely supported by our members, and sometimes people will also just do a one-off donation. And on YouTube, we're hoping to have the ability to donate for our videos shortly, Matt. But I raise that because I have something to tell you. Now, unlike Michael Bloomberg, when I say this, I mean it for life. I will never be the host of Meet the Press on NBC. And I'm going to say quite confidently, I'll also never be on a rotating panel. However, Luke Russert sounds like he will be. According to page six, Luke Russert, son of the late beloved Meet the Press host Tim Russert. I didn't particularly beloved him. Will now be a regular panelist on the Sunday morning show in a bid to turn around its catastrophic rating slide. Page Six has exclusively learned. I will make this prediction. That won't work. But I have another prediction. Also joining the new moderator Chuck Tobbs team will be former Republican Congressman and Morning Joe host Joe Scarborough. I will also say that will not work. He's taken on a larger role with NBC News as a senior political analyst and would be one of the regular Sunday panelists. And this is the most bizarre line of this whole story. We're told the move is part of a plan to bring a right-leaning voice to the program to appeal to viewers turned off by the show's famously left-leaning former hosts, including ousted David Gregory.
David Gregory was left-leaning?
What? That's like not even... why isn't my thing working? All right. Sound effect of laughter, and don't piss down my leg and tell me it's raining. David Gregory, first of all, not only is he not left-leaning, he's not famously left-leaning either. And I don't know who the other hosts are. Tim Russert was not left-leaning. But be that as it may, not only was David Gregory not left-leaning, Luke Russert and Joe Scarborough will not help the ratings of that show. You heard it here, well, maybe not first, but and maybe not as definitive. Well, I've said it pretty definitively, so there you have it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Tim Wu. We are back on the Majority Report. Sam Cedar here on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Tim Wu, law professor and, from Columbia Law School in New York, and also a candidate for the 2014 Democratic nomination for Lieutenant Governor of New York. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, Tim, let's start first. Obviously, from your perspective, why is your race and, of course, Zephyr Teachout's race against Cuomo in this primary, why are these important nationally in a political sense?
Sure. Well, I think there's beginning to be, in the second term of the Obama administration, a real struggle, discussion of where the heart and soul of the Democratic Party lies. And the key breaking issue, the difference between both sides, is over the issue of economic inequality and private concentrations of power. And I think that the race between Cuomo and Kathy Hochul and Zephyr and myself is at that fault line. And it is asking, what is the Democratic Party standing for? And I think that's what primaries are for.
Let's talk about on a policy level in terms of nationally. You know, obviously, I want to talk about New York State and your race specifically. But what implications would it have for the rest of the country, or could it have for the rest of the country, in the event that you and Zephyr Teachout prevail?
I think it'll be the election heard around the, if not the world, around the country. Andrew Cuomo, our opponent, is a Democrat from the I would have to say centrist model, and is in particularly with his on social issues he's very relatively progressive, but particularly on questions of what about concentrated private wealth donations. Wall Street, he is much closer to the Republican Party. And so I think this would say, you know, it's on. It's a version, it's a sort of state version of some of the struggles or the idea of the Warren, Elizabeth Warren wing of the party. This would be the first victory. And even if we don't win, I'm confident we will, even if we do, it'll indicate that the struggle is on.
But I guess more on a policy level. I mean, I've heard
sure.
Both you and Zephyr talk about, and obviously this is in your wheelhouse as
sure.
an expertise in antitrust and copyright
sure.
and telecommunications. But you know, I'm specifically thinking about the Comcast Time Warner merger.
Sure.
Let's
sure.
talk a little bit about those type of things. In the
right.
context of a Teachout Woo administration, before we move on to the other potential scenario.
Yeah, we would act quickly to block the Comcast takeover of New York's cable system. In our opinion, and I've studied the issue quite carefully, it's very clear that Comcast will raise prices considerably for consumers. Time Warner, on average, gets $105 a month from a customer, which is already, in my view, too high. Comcast gets an average of $154. And so if we see people's cable prices going up by $50 a month over time, you know, extracted an extra $50, that's a lot of money. And we believe that that does not serve the public interest. It is very important for the state to take on these kind of concentrations of power, not only just economic power, but also in some sense of political power and control over speech. And so that would be one of the big differences. We would, I think, expect a much more decentralized economy and a break on some of the giant mergers we're seeing. Probably the same in healthcare too, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk. I mean, I want you to continue on the healthcare thing. But what is the mechanism for that? I mean, in other words, to what extent can a state block that type of merger?
You know, the states have much greater powers than people realize. They just tend to be unused because there's some resource constraints and so forth. The state must, under New York law, approve the merger for it to go forward. In other words, they cannot complete this merger without the state giving its certification that the merger is in the public interest. Now, as I said, I've looked into it, and I do not, I cannot for the life of me understand how we think this merger is in the public interest. It will raise prices for consumers. That's the most simple, straightforward way. It will cost consumers potentially up to $1.6 billion a year in higher bills. And nothing, you know, our cable bills are already high enough. Higher bills are clearly not in the public interest. The state has the full authority to block it within its borders using one of two powers, either the public service law or the antitrust law.
And would that have national implications, or would it just simply stop it in New York State?
Well, it'd stop it in New York State, but New York State is a pretty big state.
Right.
And there are, you know, millions of customers. And so I think it would probably, Comcast would have to decide whether it would go ahead with the merger in other regions, but it would block the centerpiece of the merger. It's also possible, I should add, that California would be inspired by the New York action and stop it as well, and then the whole merger would be completely stopped.
And what other areas where would a teach-out Wu administration seek to exercise that type of antitrust authority?
Healthcare mergers is a hospital mergers is an area where I think we've allowed much too much mergers of concentration, the loss of competition between hospitals. I've been reading of studies about this, and the effects of hospital mergers and hospital shutdowns is almost inevitably rising prices for consumers and reduced outcomes, in other words, measured by fatality rates. In other words, people die more when hospitals merge. And when hospitals are shut down and concentrated, there are more deaths and higher prices. And they're extremely hard to defend. They've been getting away with these mergers because of inadequate supervision of them, and that would change under our administration. We would push her hard on the Attorney General to take a closer look at these kind of mergers.
So let's move to a story that was out, I think, in the New York Post in the past. I think it was the Post in the past couple of days by Fred Dicker that within the Cuomo campaign and administration, there's a real concern that that his choice for lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul, will not win, and you will.
Right.
And this has multiple implications, not just in the fact that he would have to see you at the office every day, but it could have an implication in terms of the general election, and to the extent that Cuomo runs up his tally, which has been his agenda. Speak to both your sense of that possibility, and then let's talk about what happens afterwards. Because there's been, to my mind, no public polling about these races at this point.
There is no public polling. And nobody knows who is going to win the election. So I have, I am confident and optimistic based on what we're seeing that Zephyr Teachout is going to pull the upset of this young century on Tuesday. And in that case, we won't face the problem you've described. I'll remind you of the Bratt-Cantor election in Virginia, where nobody saw the unseating of Cantor. This primary elections are very unusual. Turnout is low, and the people turn out are very progressively minded. And so I think there's a decent chance that, frankly, we won't face these questions because Zephyr Teachout will win the gubernatorial race.
All right. Well, indulge me in the event that we do.
Yeah, sure.
Because my understanding is that New York State law is such that the WFP would still be, unless it had some ability to change its endorsement, which I guess it would, but in terms of its on its ballot line, it would still have Cuomo Hochul, and that the in the event that you won and Teachout didn't, the Democratic line would be Cuomo Wu, and
right.
Cuomo would not accrue the votes from the WFP line, and I think it's the same with a couple other smaller parties. And obviously, he wouldn't be terribly happy about this. Tell me, in the event that does happen, how does your role change in the Cuomo administration as opposed to the Teachout administration?
Well, I think it would be something of a wild scramble. And
I mean, aside from the fact that you'd have the smallest office in Albany.
Although, you know, they can't go too far, because if you go too far, it's a if you eliminate the office, it violates the Constitution.
I mean, how much of a budget do you have, I mean, in this
system? About 600-something thousand and five full-time employees.
Wow, okay.
Which, frankly, I think I can do a lot of work with for the kind of projects I'm interested in. But I'll just to play with your scenario, I think there will be chaos, but I think a healthy form of chaos, because, you know, for a system which is somewhat confusing and strange and is used in opportunistic ways in some cases, I think it would force some examination of this party system and maybe put pressure on parties like the Independence Party. I'm focused on this race, and I'm also focused on supporting Zephyr, I should say. And if you've seen Zephyr speak or campaign, I mean, she is just inspiring people. And so, you know, to think about this stuff is kind of a distraction for me at this point. But I can, it's a good fertile ground for others to think about.
Well, I mean, okay, but I mean, if you, you know, one of the things you've got to plan for is being lieutenant governor. And so give me a sense of what you would see your role as lieutenant governor in either scenario.
Mm-hmm. Well, in either scenario, actually, it's the same in both, although I think Zephyr and I would probably have a friendlier relationship, is I want to repurpose the office of lieutenant governor into something of a public advocacy role. The original purpose of the lieutenant governor, dating to colonial times, was to serve as an important backup when the governor left the state. And back in colonial times, that could be for months at a time.
Right.
But we don't need that anymore so much, and so it's become this office which everyone refers to as being of no, you know, no function anymore, other than ceremonial. So I would re-envision the office as a public advocacy office that would look for important issues to weigh in on and crusade about. You know, I can't say Comcast, Time Warner being one of those. I don't think there's anyone in state government who's, other than the Service Commission itself, who's weighing in and saying this is what should be done based on their independent research. So I would be an independent voice for the people, and I think that would be a more useful role, a better use of taxpayer dollars than a mere ceremonial role that dates to colonial times.
Yeah, I mean, I've done my own personal survey. I haven't come up with one person who knows who the lieutenant governor in New York State is. It's a guy named Duffy who will not be rerunning, apparently.
Right.
And so let's...
And can I say...
Please.
Well, I'll just say that. His role was more the tradition, which I think is a waste, which is to be a cheerleader. But I don't think... You know, the current governor does not need any more cheerleaders. I think he's got plenty of cheerleaders already. And what we have is too much power concentrated in one office, as opposed to more independent voices.
I mean, I've read where you've talked about Cuomo's governance style as being extremely transactional, and we saw the New York Times endorse you. It specifically refused to endorse Cuomo, but it also did not endorse Zephyr Teachout, and one of the reasons was that they did not know if she had the ability to sort of knock heads, I guess, in the way that Cuomo does. But in some respects, that's the problem with Cuomo, isn't it? I mean, that
right.
Knock heads is a euphemism for is somewhat corrupt-ish, if we can say.
Yes.
I don't know.
Well,
I mean,
I don't think it's corrupt. There's some elements. I mean, look, the shutdown of the Anti-Corruption Commission, I don't think we have to call that something. We don't use a euphemism. I think it's corrupt to shut down an anti-corruption commission, and it may have violated a state criminal law. To some of what they did with directing the subpoenas and so forth, the Moreland Commission is what we're referring to. So there is some parts that are intense. Now, all things in moderation. I think it is useful in some ways to have a governor who can get things done, but it shouldn't be, you know, someone. We don't only. It can go too far. And what we have now is a situation where it goes too far, and I think there needs to be more of a check, and I would offer myself as a candidate as someone who would be an independent voice and challenge the governor when I think he's going too far.
But what do you mean by go too far? I mean, we had a piece, Zephyr Teachout wrote a piece in the Huffington Post, I think it was yesterday or the day before, talking about the sort of the history of New York State gambling. And we certainly saw in the context of the charter battle and the battle for universal pre-K You know, Ken Langone shows up at the governor's office with a check, and the next day Governor Cuomo is out in the streets protesting on behalf of charter schools. I mean, give us your sense of what the Cuomo administration has been about.
I mean, I think it's exactly what you just described, a sense that donations are a great investment. You know, you can, for relatively even hundreds of thousands of dollars, you can get millions or maybe multiple million-dollar payoffs from donations to the which makes him hard to unseat, but is bad for democracy, but also bad for individual, bad for you know, the number of economic developers who, real estate developers who've gotten special breaks, you know, get special favors one way or another from the Cuomo administration. The list is staggering. Zephyr and I keep a running list. I don't have it with me right now. But I think it fosters a sense. I think it hurts economic development in the following sense. That people feel like, well, in order to really play in this state, you need to be in with the governor. And I think that discourages people like immigrant groups who want a fair shake and want a level playing field.
Give us, in terms of economic development, one of the big issues in New York State is the lack of development that seems to be sticking in terms of upstate New York.
Yeah.
And I know this is something that you have thought quite a bit about, and probably also, you know, coming from a tech background.
Yes.
Give us your sense of what needs to happen in terms of upstate development.
I think that we're in real dangers of repeating the mistakes of the past, which is to say, to invest in things like tax subsidy programs or casinos or other silver bullets, which are supposed to solve all the woes of the region in one fell swoop. I think the better approach, I think we need sustained investment in upstate New York, not just one-time sort of I'm not opposed to the Buffalo Billion, for example, but I think it should be an ongoing commitment as opposed to sort of this one-time handing out of favors left and right. And so I think we need to invest more in higher education and try to mimic the areas of the country, like Pittsburgh, for example, which have really successfully transitioned from being an industrial economy to being a post-industrial economy, and be studying from the best to understand how you transition properly. But I'm afraid we're going for all the old gimmicks like tax credits, casinos, you name it, Bass Pro, trying to attract big shops, when we should be investing inside, trying to encourage people to go to school, these great schools in upstate New York, make those schools the best they can, stay there, and grow the economy from within.
Give us your sense. You were just endorsed yesterday, I think it was, by Mark Ruffalo, who is best known, I think, you know, nationally as an actor, but he's tremendously engaged in the fracking issue, and not just on an individual level. He's basically developed an entire organization around these environmental issues. Your position on fracking in New York State?
I think we should ban hydrofracking and join states like Vermont that have done so. I think it's a bad bet. Again, it's repeating to my mind some of the mistakes of the past. It's trading off some short-term potential for long-term economic damage. And I would imagine, based on the science, that in fact the cost of hydrofracking over the long term will be much greater than the economic benefits, which anyways will go to a couple small companies mainly. Not small companies, but, you know, will be concentrated in the hands of a few. So I think it's the wrong bet for New York. You know, do we really want to be, with casinos or with hydrofracking, do we really want to be, you know, either Atlantic City or West Virginia? Those are our models. Or our model places like Pittsburgh, as I said earlier, which has developed as a sort of more sustained multi-dimensional economy as opposed to depending on resource extraction.
All right, let's turn to, for those that aren't aware, you are widely credited with creating or coining the term net neutrality, and you've obviously been heavily engaged in this issue. Give us a sense where we are with net neutrality. At the beginning of this year, the FCC lost its court case, which was predicted by many because of their choice not to go towards a reclassification of internet providers rather than try and sort of, I guess, jerry-rig some mechanism where they, wherein they would keep the internet open. Give us your sense of where we're at and what needs to happen next.
I would say I'm cautiously optimistic. So I'm obviously a net neutrality supporter. I think it's a really important policy. I've been unbelievably heartened by the fact that more than a million Americans have taken time to write the government and express their concern. You know, it takes, you have to file and comment online, and it's over a million people have done so to say they want the internet to remain open, to remain neutral. They don't like the idea of slow lanes for some speakers and fast lanes for other speakers. They find that repulsive. I think the government, as I said, I'm cautiously optimistic the government is listening and will do the right thing in the fall. I've been working both with the FCC and to some degree the White House to try to push and encourage them to do what I think is the right thing, which is to restore net neutrality.
And, where are we in that process now? The FCC has gotten the comments. Tom Wheeler has sort of backpedaled a little bit on some of the plans that he's rolled out. I mean, where are we in that process?
I say that with some precision. Right now there is an internal debate going on both at the FCC and frankly inside the entire federal government of the relevant agencies as to what is the right approach, and everyone's thinking about it. I think that there will be a rule announced in the fall. I can't tell you exactly when, and I think it will hopefully contain elements of a public utility model for the internet and say, listen, in some ways this is the utility of our times. It's like electricity or water. There's certain parts of the internet that are now like a utility, and I think we're maybe a month or two away from a rule.
Now, will that be reclassification, or do you think it would be something, some third way? I guess.
My bet is it'll be a partial reclassification. For those of you who are interested in the legal details, it'll be a partial
reclassification. We've gotten very much into the weeds in this.
If there's anybody
listening to this program who doesn't understand what I'm talking about with classification, we will cut their stream off. So,
I think we'll have a partial reclassification. That is my bet right now. Which means to say, it's hard to explain in a quickly, but it means that we will have a declaration that at least parts of the broadband network are a utility. And need to be regulated as a utility.
Interesting. And we should just say, the internet was originally classified in such a way. That was a decision that was reversed during the Bush administration. And it was anticipated when President Obama was elected that his FCC would reclassify internet services as a common carrier in the same way that we perceive the telephone service in this country.
Go ahead.
Well, I want to move to just a couple other questions about that I think, sort of more general, not necessarily dealing with the race as well. But you, of course, wrote a book now, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago, The Master Switch. And I want to talk a little bit about your perception of regulation. You have some interesting perspectives on it I think you've at time referred to yourself with a streak of libertarianism. I love to argue with libertarians, but I'm not sure that we're going to have that much of an argument. But talk a little bit about that, particularly in the context of some of the new sharing economy issues.
It's a really interesting question. I see myself as a new Democrat. I'm very concerned about issues like inequality and traditional social issues like gay marriage and civil rights and so forth. On regulation, I'm not anti-regulatory, but I am strongly of the belief that we need a very dynamic approach, which is to say that when it comes to new companies, we should wait and see whether there is evidence of actual harm before moving to regulate them prospectively, as it were. And so when it comes to the sharing economy, for example, I think New York has been too aggressive in trying to hunt down Airbnb people who use Airbnb and has instituted fines which are outrageous for individuals to pay. You know, there's cases of people paying $75,000 in fines.
Really?
Yes, individuals for renting out their rooms for something they didn't even really know was illegal, and which seems kind of, you know, not that harmful. Now, I'm not going to say there's no potential harms from something like Airbnb or Uber, and I'm not going to say I would never regulate them. I'm not this kind of tech utopian. But sometimes we've had a tendency to say, oh, well, just, you know, this looks, this is illegal. There's some law we can interpret to call this illegal. Often, and I think really unfortunately, at the behest of the existing hotel industry or in the case of Uber and the taxi industry, that they don't want this service to go forward. And so I have, I think, frankly, what I think is that you need to wait and see, be very patient, and try to have a light hand with these things and wait for harm to develop. On the other hand, maybe the contradiction is, I think some of the big established industries, I was just talking about net neutrality, I think once you've studied a problem well, you know what's going on, and you have an established monopoly, you need to be tough on those monopolies. And I think sometimes we have it wrong. We're too hard on young, new companies, small companies, and too soft on the big established monopolies. We let them get away with too much, basically because they have better lawyers. And that's, I think, we've got it exactly backwards in our regulatory structure right now.
That seems less like less about regulatory structure and more about the execution, right? I mean, there was there's no reason for, you know, you would have to almost retroactively go back to before Airbnb existed to change the regulations in terms of those.
Right.
And there was probably a time where it made a lot more sense to have those things. Same too with, I would say, something with Uber. But this is a question of almost prosecutorial discretion or regulatory discretion. We clearly, I mean, and we see this with on a national level with the banks, and frankly, also in New York State. Andrew Cuomo was in a position to do something with the banks and did nothing.
Did nothing. It's a very perceptive comment. I would say, you know, I worked in law enforcement in the federal government, and the antitrust laws are 150 or 140 years old or whatever, and so you know it's not like we're passing new laws. It's all about the enforcement policy, and I think enforcement policy is where the action is. And as I guess I would say, our approach to it is all wrong in New York State, in the sense that we are really tough on small business and new businesses, and too lenient on big businesses. And too lenient in enforcing some of the laws which, for example, are supposed to keep prices low. You know, we've let cable prices get out of control, just as one example. And so, yes, I think it's upside down. And the obvious reason is that the biggest companies have more, and Wall Street is the other example. Andrew Cuomo did nothing, as you say, despite this one sector throwing the entire country into an enormous recession, using so much through illegal means. Through what I would just straight up call fraud. And so the richer companies are better lawyered and obviously more scary to investigate, but that's why we need even more to investigate them, and we need strong prosecutors who have the courage to take on big business and as opposed to targeting little guys.
Do you think, I mean, because I know that you were an advisor to the FTC, as you said, for a year or two, I guess, back in 2011. And do you think it's, I mean, how much of it is it, you know, to sort of bring this full circle, how much of it is it a function of on the regulatory level? And, you know, we see this with Dodd-Frank, for instance, where, you know, regulators who had the task to sort of fill in all, dot the I's and the T's and maybe even add some of the conjunctions and the prepositions on the regulation of the banks are hammered by and essentially just out you know, gunned in a war of attrition by industry lawyers. How much of it is that, and how much of it is things that maybe if I'm attorney general, I'm looking to run for governor at one point, and I don't want to piss off some major donors, whereas these little guys, they're not going to be big donors for me?
I think the answer is both. So I was at the federal government, which has more resources, and even there I watched us be outgunned sometimes. I saw lawyers be intimidated. You know, really dirty moves sometimes, like filing ethics complaints against lawyers or threatening them with no future career if they ever wanted to leave the government. So sometimes the lawyers, and that's the federal government, you know, at the state level where the salaries are considerably lower, the resource, there's just less lawyers. There's even more problems of just straight out being outgunned, and it's part of a symptom of the, you know, there's an out of private concentrated power. It's out of whack how much they can afford to spend on lawyers. But I also think the second factor you mentioned is exactly a second part of the problem is that, and this is a problem that's gripping the Democratic Party right now, is some people running for office, Democrat Cuomo is a good example, know that the main source of contributions is Wall Street and real estate developers. And so what advantage do you gain by going after them? None. And so therefore, maybe just go after somebody else would be better. And I don't know if it's conscious, but it certainly, as someone running for office and knowing how much donations matter, it starts linking to campaign finance as well, where since you know donations are so important, it just de-incentivizes people to become an enemy of Wall Street or an enemy of the real estate industry.
Tim Wu, if people want more information or to help out your campaign over the next, I guess, 5 days before the primary, where can they go?
TimWu.org. My name, TimWu.org. And we are it's only a few days away. Every little small or large contribution helps us out. And just most important is coming out to vote on the 9th. And I hope you'll consider me as your candidate for lieutenant governor.
Tim Wu, thanks so much for your time today. Genuinely appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. Tim Wu running with Zephyr Teachout to unseat Governor Cuomo and to beat out Kathy Hochul to administer the governorship in New York State. It'll be pretty exciting if just knowing that Cuomo has to, just the humiliation of Cuomo. And you know what I forgot to do is I forgot to tell Tim Wu that he should be using quid pro Cuomo, which, of course, came from a listener on this program. Folks, speaking of listeners of this program, we rely on our listeners for nearly 99% of our revenue on this program. You know, I was reading one thing that Tim Wu had to say about donations for the campaign. And, of course, Zephyr Teachout was very prominent in pushing publicly financed campaigns. And the theory behind that is not too dissimilar to the theory behind our program. When you have many donations, smaller donations, as opposed to one big, two big, or three big sources of your revenue, it allows for more independence. And I don't care what organization it would be it, I don't know, Move On or Chili's Restaurants or whomever, if I had to rely on them, I'm not saying that Chili's or Move On, frankly, is terribly interested in supporting this program. But if I had to, we would just simply not have the independence to basically just provide you commentary and interviews that just emanate out of our own interests here at this program. So we rely on members. We put out a lot of content, more than most podcasts, frankly, by far. And so we hope that you can support the program. We've got two URLs that are in contention. Neither one yet goes to where we want to go.
So don't tell anybody yet.
Oh, okay. So just for now, go to majority.fm and sign up to become a member. Of course, if you buy crap from Amazon, go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on our Amazon link, bookmark it, buy all your crap from there. You'll notice no difference, but we get a kickback. That's why we call it majoritykickback.com. Give us a review on iTunes, for God's sakes. That costs you nothing. You do it once, you never have to do it again unless you do it again.
I can't stress how important that is, that iTunes review. I mean, if you want to support the show without spending a dime, that's the most important thing you could do.
What's amazing is that we have reviews. I mean, I guess we got stars from, I don't know, 600-700 people. We got reviews, I think, from 300 or 400 people. And that is such an infinitesimally small percentage of our listeners that it's impossible for me to calculate, even using a calculator. So please, give us a review on iTunes. Of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Want to be a part of this program today? 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM the program at Majority FM on AIM, or get the app at majorityapp.com. IM us with one click of the button. The app, incidentally, totally free. Super free, we call it. Too free. In the funner half today, that Halbig case, that's super fun for me. Kansas Senate race completely is a new race. That could be the one. Food gap, quality food. Huge gap between low-income people and the rich in this country. Also, Governor LaPage says something stupid. Oh, and speaking of saying something stupid, we got Ted Cruz's father, and you know what that means. We got Ted Cruz's father's impressions to do. And, of course, Bloomberg could be. We may not even. We may just do.
We'll barely hear our actual voices on the phone.
It's going to get crazy, ladies and gentlemen. Super crazy. All right, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back.